Yes, my mic is on. You were listening to the United States Field Artillery March by John Philip Sousa. This was written in 1917, and it's appropriate for the week of our independence.
I'm going to march. Hold on.
Okay. Oh, you are marching.
It's a good march, right?
Yeah. I have very fond memories of my daughter at a Memorial Day parade watching the high school band go by, and she says, "Let me march! Let me march!" And she jumped down off my shoulders, and she marched the whole length of the parade, right until the very end.
Friggin' Nazi.
It was such a nice story until you called her a Nazi.
Were you in the band?
No, I was never in the band.
No.
No. No.
But you could pass.
I could pass as a member of the band?
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it.
Like I imagine if you just like showed up, they would hand you like the majorette kind of.
Yeah.
I guess a major, not a majorette, right? You're a man.
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They would just give you the.
I would like to think that I would have an instrument.
I mean, if I gave you an instrument. All right. I can see, you know, you're one of the more like dude members, like the manlier people. So you would go like a saxophone. I'm seeing like a saxophone or do they have French horns in the marching band?
Yeah, they have French horns, sousaphones.
Yeah, like you would, you're too manly for a clarinet.
Hey, Woody Allen plays a clarinet.
Yes, the manliest man that we know. Woody Allen, great example right there.
When I was in fourth grade, I did try to play the saxophone. I didn't get very far with it. Mm-hmm. And in fifth grade, I switched over on my music teacher's recommendation to the oboe, which is a reed instrument.
Mm-hmm.
And that did not go well at all. I had a very dispiriting April Fool's Day thing where I and my brother, my twin brother, switched, and I gave him my oboe and said, "Okay, here's how you play middle C. Just hold on to this and just play whatever you want to play, just so long as it's in middle C."
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully he won't notice. And not only didn't he notice at all, Sean went through with flying colors, and I had been doing this for like 3 months. And when I heard that my music teacher didn't notice that I like was not playing at all.
Actually, yeah.
Yes. Yes, like, oh, he's not actually paying attention. I have no idea how well I'm doing with this instrument. He only recommended the oboe because that's what he tells everyone. He tells everyone, pick the oboe. It's the easiest instrument.
Did Sean have an instrument too? Or like did you have to take over his instrument?
I forget what he had. I think he had the French horn.
Mm-hmm. That's what you put your hand in, right?
You
shove your hand into the French horn.
Right. Welcome to the 1917 podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Ryan. Joining me, as always, is Vinny Nardiello.
Ahoy, ahoy.
And this week, we are brought to you by radium therapy, the only scientific apparatus for the preparation of radioactive water in the hospital or in the patient's own home. The apparatus gives a high and measured dosage of radioactive drinking water. Why are you laughing? What is wrong with putting radium in your drinking water?
It's like 1917 Brita.
Yes.
Kind of, yeah.
I don't see anything wrong with this, but we will be talking about this next week. We have a whole episode devoted to the Radium Girls, but I'm giving you a little taste of radium.
So what is this apparatus that get you?
It's basically a chunk of radium that you put in water so that it irradiates the water. So that when you drink it, you are drinking radium.
And why would you want to do this?
Ah, let me continue to the comment.
All right, okay.
For the treatment of gout, rheumatism, arthritis, neuralgia, sciatica, tabes dorsalis, catarrh of the antrum and frontal sinus, I think these are mostly Game of Thrones characters, arterial sclerosis, diabetes, and glycosuria, and nephritis. As described in Dr. Saberman's lecture before the Rochin Society, printed in this number of the archives.
So, all right, so that's a time to determine, like, a radium can cure all these things.
Yes.
In 100 years, will people be mocking, like, weed in the same way? Like, can you believe they thought marijuana was going to cure your diabetes?
And I think it's going to be coffee. If you think about it, there's 350 million people in America, and I'd say at least 250 to 275 of them every day are imbibing a drug.
Yeah.
They are taking a drug to make them more alert.
I drink about a half pot of coffee a day.
Wow, that's a lot.
Is it?
Yeah.
I think that's about average.
I think average is 3 cups. But I guess that your half pot is 4 cups, right?
No, I guess we got six.
Six? Yeah. Okay. Now here's something else I need to ask you, because people are very fuzzy on this. When you say 6 cups of coffee, technically a cup is 8 ounces.
I'm going by the cups they have on the cups they have. Three of, like, you know, what we consider a real person's cup.
Okay. So not like a mug that you would have, like, like French onion soup.
No, I don't have, like, six of those.
Okay. And, okay. Back to a little bit more of radium before we go on to the show. The perforated earthenware activator in the glass jar, this is what you want to know, contains an insoluble preparation impregnated with radium. It continuously emits radium emanation at a fixed rate and keeps the water in the jar always charged to a fixed and measurable strength from 5,000 to 10,000 Mache units per liter per diem. Supplied by Radium Limited, St. Mortimer Street, London.
What? When did they decide that, like, all right, you know what? Copy should be something that is, like, you know, short, interesting, and to the point. Like when did the whole idea of, like, writing copy change?
Yeah, it's still very Dickensian. Like, like, we need to put as many words in this page as possible. Cut out any picture of the image or models using the product or, you know, a happy day or a rainbow.
Because this is a time when, like probably 80% of the population was illiterate.
Right.
I don't really know that. I'm just running out of a number.
We were a nation of newspaper readers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, half. Half the people illiterate.
Okay. Fine.
That's my guess.
Yeah.
Even then, probably wrong. But, yeah, so you have, like, all these illiterate people, and this is how you advertise. It should just be all pictures, really.
It makes me think that the advertisement now is actually worse, because instead of saying, here is a list of benefits, we're going for emotional appeals. We're going for, oh, look at that cute family, I should really buy some Wheaties. Mm-hmm. Instead of, well, here's a list of why Wheaties are good, why it's better than a comparator.
Yeah, you're trying to make people identify with the product.
Right.
You know, like if they had radium now, it would be like the couple, like the middle-aged couple in two bathtubs on the side of a cliff, like a Cialis ad.
Yeah. It's like all these ads were written for like 1950s robots. Like, what is this salty discharge running down my cheek? Oh, look at the superior quality of this Wheaties to a comparator cereal. I shall buy this Wheaties.
Now your family's coming home any minute, right?
Yes, we're going to stop this when my family comes home. They are a little delayed.
Come. Yeah, we're here in the kitchen.
You know what? Let's do radium this week. Let's talk about radium this week.
No, I'm trying to set the scene for everybody.
Okay, fine. Should we mention that we have a guest sitting in on the podcast this week? I think now's a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, actually, first, I want you to apologize.
Oh, okay. Last week, we had a sound issue in that the sound was, to use a technical term, ass.
Yes. And you posted it anyway.
I did, because the alternative was not posting it. It's not like I had multiple strains of this and I picked the worst one. There was only one recording.
I would have come back.
You would have come back?
I would have come back.
Now, we have had one or two times where we would have a 5-minute talk and we realized the mics weren't picking it up, so we go and try to redo the 5-minute talk.
And it never works out.
No, and it did seem weird. It was like a sort of like Groundhog Day variant, where we couldn't quite tell in the middle of the third conversation whether we were rehashing stuff from the first or the second conversation, but the second one was just trying to rehash the first
one. Yeah, my memory isn't good enough for that.
Yeah. Like, we could have done it 10 times and it would have felt about the same as doing it 3 times in terms of this is the actor's nightmare. We're just going to do this over and over.
So we have that one bad show out there.
Yeah.
That is going to just ruin us.
Well, you know, I've heard actors say that there's no better impetus to being good at your craft than by delivering a bad performance that's captured on film.
Now, I think this was God.
You this think was God responsible?
Furious at you for not smoking a cigar.
God's a cigar smoker?
Well, yes, yeah, right. George Burns. As is the devil.
Oh, that joke was perfectly designed to destroy our particular guest this week. We should introduce him, but he is literally choking on beer.
No, and I know I was supposed to read a book.
Yes.
I am going to withhold that book until you smoke a cigar.
Oh, you're making a new deal.
Yes.
I might read the book. I might.
Wait. So it's been a week. Have you started the book?
I have to actually go and remember the name of it.
So you have not started.
But I'm not going to be able.
You have not bought the book. You don't remember the name of the book.
I can't listen to the podcast and find out the name because there's no audio. So how am I going to know? No, I'll find out. I have the book. I will read and I will deliver my opinion on it when you smoke a cigar.
This is Trumpy. This is really Trumpy. This is changing the goalpost after you said something.
I think you look kind of cute with a cigar. You do, because you're not the type to indulge in cigars and brandy and that kind of thing. I think that it would be something kind of like adorable, like when people take a picture of like a baby holding a beer. And you know, like when white trash people take a picture of like a kid with a beer. You know, I can see that. Yeah, I can see that. You with a cigar is the baby with a beer,
and it'd be cute. I have had a cigar like. I dressed up as Groucho Marx one time for Halloween.
And when you were like 26 years old. Talk about this. And you trick or treat.
Yes. Yes. And I have had that experience with a cigar. So what you were trying to get me to do, I have basically already done.
You didn't light it.
And I didn't light it, and I didn't particularly like it. And I didn't like that I liked it. That I was like, oh, I want to keep doing this.
All right. When you smoke a cigar, here's the fun thing of a cigar.
Mm-hmm.
Do you like gesturing?
I do like gesturing. Yes,
you can gesture. You don't want to gesture. You're really, you know, like you make a point with it. Yeah, there's a lot of emphasis that comes from a cigar. You know, you can just see yourself in like, you know, meeting with a lobbyist.
Yeah, but
gesturing with that cigar.
But I'm not Robert Loggia. I don't do that on a regular basis. I don't need it for emphasis.
You'll see. All right, so the book and cigar, that'll be the deal. Will you shake on this?
No. No, because really? I thought we had a basic handshake that you were going to read a book. Remember how you said that you thought I was disparaging you for being lazy?
We had a deal that you plug your mic in. And we don't always deliver, do we?
That wound is going to be salted on a weekly basis.
No, all right, yeah, so we do have a guest here.
Yes.
You know, who is my friend Steve. And he told me just weeks ago that if we make it to the halfway point of the year.
Okay, so 26 weeks.
Yeah.
Yep.
He would give us some sort of present. Come on, you want to come over here? I'm assuming this is 1917.
Wow, this is our first friend of the show, Steve Canovo. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Thank you for having me.
You put on a show hat, I just noticed.
No. Wearing a newsy hat for the show. I'll take it off.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my god, yeah. Hurry it up. Wait, what's going on? Dead air.
All right, so just don't open it yet, but just take it.
Thank you.
And Vinny, I have a...
Ooh,
Vinny,
there's some bulk to it.
I have...
You're killing me with the youth marker, and you mentioned it.
He usually gives gifts in a ShopRite bag, so I wound up one up in my...
All right, so
Trader Joe's bag.
You should open first.
Well, you can open them together.
Together?
That's okay. It. All right, this is our 1917
thing.
Oh, it's a t-shirt.
A Mexican beer, Modelo. I don't... Was it a... Is this from 1917? What's the...
Oh,
Mexico was a country in 1917.
I have a Modelo beer as well.
All right. Okay, let's see.
Oh.
I designed the t-shirt. Oh, my God.
Wow. This is awesome.
We should sell this.
Well, if anybody wants to purchase one,
Oh, my God. Look at that.
Wow, this is amazing.
Can you put our shirts on now? We're making shirts. Yeah, the front has a...
The front?
Top hat with little,
yeah.
Like Mr. Peanut type character.
The 1917
Monopoly podcast. Man, like, yeah.
And on the back it says Ahoy Hoy and has a little tugboat style sailor hat.
Vinny has
mustache, monocle.
Vinny has all that. So that.
What is that? Why you give me syringes?
That's from my...
And sugar? And Bob Evans. Oh, yeah. I hope you stole the Bob Evans. I'm a big Bob Evans fan.
If you could drink the Modelo out of the Bob Evans coffee mug, I'd appreciate it.
I will do that, actually. I'm done with this.
When I was in Lancaster, I was trying...
This is a more liquored up show than usual.
Yeah.
I stole some sugar. We got four packets of sugar from Bob Evans restaurant. You don't need to put that in there.
But right. Vinny's shirt listeners, the fact that you stole
at least like four listeners. We love these shirts.
Yeah, I'll open up the Modelo.
Did you make one for yourself?
Yeah, no, I have one for myself. And if anybody wants to order a shirt, I can have more.
All right.
Great. I can have more made.
I'm putting mine on, too.
All right, so yeah, contact either Jeff or myself. I don't think I've ever seen Jeff's
now
shirts.
Now,
hold on.
The shirts are large.
Hold on. You're not in bad shape.
You're actually not in bad shape.
No, you're not. You kind of have some abdominal definition.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, not bad.
No, I'll be honest with you. I always had you pegged as like one of those like skinny fat people.
I know of the type. Yeah,
yeah,
like until recently I was.
Where you'd be thin, but you'd have boobs. But no, you're pretty good, decent shape, actually.
Well, thank you. The whole reason I was doing this show was just so that it was on a hot summer day. I hope someone would make me a t-shirt, then I could take it off, and then I could receive vicarious compliments.
Well, you delivered.
So, mission accomplished.
Then you could fit into the large.
So we're done with the podcast now. I've gotten the compliments, so I'm all set. Okay, this has been fun, people. Goodbye.
I'll say put it on.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a good fit. That's a really good fit.
That's
yeah.
good, yeah.
Now, a little looser on you than Vinny.
Well, yeah, I'm you know, I work out.
So do you like the design? I did the front.
Oh, this is wonderful. This is great.
And I did the bowler and the monocle and the mustache and the back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, anybody wants one, I guess, you can make them up.
So we'll take,
when you, where should they contact us? What's the best way to contact us? Can they contact us through the website?
Oh, I had an email years and years ago for the, well, 6 months ago, and I haven't even checked it because I haven't mentioned it. But just email me. I'm jeffryan1@gmail.com.
Who's Jeff Ryan, you think? There's like a, you know, like... Do you ever want to get that number taken
Jeff
off?
JeffRyan.com is a DJ in Florida.
Oh, fuck that guy.
When you get to show number 50, there will be a very special presentation.
Ooh.
So that'll be, obviously, what, December?
Yeah.
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 Now, at the end, are we going to do like one of those like recap episodes where like, we reminisce...
Oh, we could. I like that.
Do you remember
looking
that
back
time
on the year
when
that
we,
was?
You know, we all got stoned at the airport. We did that kind of thing.
Now, traditionally, the reason why people do
that's Golden Girls episode, Vinny.
is because they're on vacation. Because, they can lay that down in advance, and then they can go be with their families.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we can do the same thing. We can record it way in advance, and we just won't see each other for all of December.
Are you on vacation all in the coming weeks?
Yeah.
I am too.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do a vacation episode.
Okay. I'm on board.
Okay.
We can talk about the vacation spots of 1917.
This is wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah.
Ahoy,
thank you very
ahoy.
Much, Steve.
Yeah.
You're quite welcome.
Oh, so you're going to stay? Oh, okay. All right. Anyway. No, you're welcome to stay.
I'll leave in a little bit.
No, you're welcome to stay. Stay for the episode. Sit in.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. So, on to race riots.
Yay! Actually, I believe in North Race Riots. This is the anniversary. That's not 100 years ago.
But 100 years ago, there was the East St. Louis, Illinois Race Riots.
Mm-hmm.
You know how there's a Kansas City, Missouri, and a Kansas City, Kansas?
Yes, I've been to both.
Ah, there's apparently a St. Louis on the Illinois side called East St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of factories there because of World War I. And this is the rare sort of, like, explosion of violence instead of an actual explosion of gunpowder, because there were 2,000 workers coming into the town every week in order to get factory jobs, and most all of the people coming in were black workers that were coming from the South. It was part of what's called the Great Migration.
Mm-hmm.
And the existing white laborers who lived in the town did not like that new black faces were coming in and getting their jobs. So there were about 3,000 of them that over 2 days, one in May and one in July, just started to riot and kill people and burn down neighborhoods and all sorts of horrible things that I'm not even going to talk about because it would drag down the podcast.
Well, I think it's one, you know, here's it. Our role's on the podcast. So you're the guy, you do like the straight news or whatever, and I come up. You're really asking a lot of me here.
I am. Yes. So that's why I'm not making a whole episode out of this, because it would break the podcast.
Yeah. What am I supposed to do? Like, you know.
Yeah. Like every week we have to deal with explosions and find ways of making the fact that 800 people died in Nebraska fun. But I don't want to do that. So we can just talk about this and mention that it was a tragedy of a different stripe, and a tragedy that is still ongoing nowadays, not in the 2,000 or not in 200 people dead, which is what happened in these race riots.
I mean, before we did the epic, before we started recording, you were doing this really offensive voice that I don't even want to get into. And I told you we shouldn't have it there. It was kind of like Amos Nandy-ish. And I told you it was a bad idea. I stepped in, you know, and I advise who gets it. And as a result, we don't have much to fill here.
No. So, So the rest of my podcast is going to be under the bus that Vinny has thrown me. So we're moving on to our big story of the week. So we are going to talk about radium. We started to talk about it, so we should continue talking about it. I am reading a book called Radium Girls. It came out this year, and it's about the 100th anniversary of the Radium Girls.
Aren't those going to be like who are those girls that are all like tattooed?
The Suicide Girls?
That's it, yeah, yeah.
No, this is this is different. This is more like the Homicide Girls. So, starting in 1917, young girls and women started to work in Newark, New Jersey, right down the road, and they were working in a radium factory called the USRC, United States Radium Corporation. Their job was to paint radium on watch dials, because radium glowed in the dark. And radium is expensive. It cost $125,000 a gram back then. That's $2.2 million now. So very little radium was used. Mostly it was paint with just the slightest bit of radium put in, just enough so that it would actually glow.
It's kind of put on the little fish.
Yes, but they're using something other than radium now. I'm hoping they're using something other than radium now. And
did that blow your mind when you found that out, that those fish were painted?
Wait, tell me about
those little neon fish that you see at like pet stores. I think they're painted with neon. They're not actually neon.
No.
You think they're painted?
I've been told.
Told by who?
I've heard that. I think my dad. no, there's like they paint them.
Do you truly believe this? I don't know if you're putting on an act or not.
No, I'm serious. No? I believe they're painted. They're not really. That's not a naturally occurring thing.
Bioluminescence is a real thing, though. It happens all across nature.
Oh, no, but not on those pet store
fish. But on this one, they decided to fake bioluminescence?
Yeah.
In a fish that costs like $3?
They have people just painting the fish.
Where is this being done? Can I get a job painting a fake fish?
The radium factory's converted over to
painting fish?
Yeah, just fish coming down a conveyor belt and, you know, like Lucy and Ethel on the end painting the fish with neon. I'm pretty sure this is true.
We had fish growing up, and there was a terrible tragedy with the fish.
With the neon.
They were not neon fish, but I'm gonna bring it over to the Radium Girls because it's another tragedy. We bought a big frog and we bought newts as well, and we wanted to make them warm because it was Easter weekend. So we turned the tank up a little bit more than we should have, and we came down the next morning. And did you know that newts can explode?
Oh God! So like the poor frog was there living amongst.
Yeah, we had 5 newts. Yesterday, and then we come down this morning, Easter Sunday, and we have bouillabaisse.
Was a frog like kind of like swimming among it? Like
the frog didn't care, and so then we
savage.
We got rid of the newts. We gave up on them, and we put goldfish in. And then one by one, the goldfish were disappearing. We couldn't figure out why until we found the frog like, with the goldfish half in its mouth, like Homer Simpson and the sandwich, where it's just like it's too much for me to eat, but. I don't want to take a bite, so I'm just going to leave it in my mouth until I have capacity. The fish was like the Joey Chestnut of his day.
I didn't know frogs ate fish like that. I was always just insects.
No, frogs are omnivores. They'll eat anything.
Mm-hmm.
They'll eat anything you put in front of them.
Now, I remember when I was a kid, my sister had always some frogs in our cousin's backyard.
Mm-hmm.
And the fun part was, what we'd do is we'd get like June bugs.
Okay.
Like fireflies. And throw them in the tank with the frog. And you eat them and you turn the lights off. And the frog would glow.
Wow.
Like a painted fish, he'd glow.
Wow. And you brought it back to radium with glowing. Good job.
There we go.
High five. Bring it up. Bring it up.
That's why we get t-shirts.
So the paint was called Undark. It may still be used on fish nowadays, according to reliable sources. It was mostly zinc sulfide mixed into the glow. Undark, I don't know, is still around. Hopefully it's not. But it was nicknamed Liquid Sunshine. Now, Newark, 100 years ago, was an immigrant city. There were a lot of Germans, there were a lot of Irish, a lot of Italians, there were Poles, there were Jews from the Eastern Europe. Radium was considered the greatest find in history, so it was like a big deal. You were considered an artist if you were working in this factory, even though you were just painting
fish.
Painting fish, and also painting clocks when you ran out of fish.
Mm-hmm.
But you needed to use a very small brush, and the brush didn't work well in water because it was so small. So there was a technique called lip and dip, which was you would dip a little bit of radium paint in. You would then smooth it out on your lips in order to get a good top, a good finish, and then you'd paint your two or your three, whatever number it was. And then you'd lip dip and go back again.
Mm-hmm. So I think I know where this is going with mouth cancer.
Yes. Okay. Yes, but it's more than just mouth cancer. Because the way radium works is it duplicates calcium. So when you swallow it, it goes into your bones, just like calcium would. And it stays there. And at first, because your bones are where the red blood cells are produced, it creates more red blood cells because that's how cancer works. It just creates more and more life. So you do feel a little burst of energy for a little bit, which is where the myth of radium is being healthful comes from. But over the years, you will develop a whole series of awful, ghastly things. Just like with the race riots, there were things that I'm reading about in this book. I don't want to tell you.
I thought radium cures everything.
According
to our ad before.
According to our ad, yes. But the ad was slightly misleading. Now, luckily, that ad may have been even more misleading because a lot of products that were sold as radium health products didn't actually contain any radium. It was like radium adjacent. The same way that if you buy like an Asian-inspired lean cuisine, it doesn't actually mean that there's a guy in Yokohama, Japan who made it for you. It just meant that they put a water chestnut in.
Mm-hmm. I know. That's the only thing I don't know.
Yeah. So the factory in Newark closed down, and they moved to a bigger place in Orange, New Jersey. When I heard that, I got interested because I drive.
You're from an Orange.
I'm from South Orange, and I drive through Orange every day to get to work. So I looked it up, and I passed by this place. I passed by the USRC factory every single day.
Does it still stand? It's still there.
They tore it down, and it is now a children's park.
Oh.
So now, every time I pass by, I look at the kids playing, and I get really, really worried that they are all going to be falling over dead.
You want to go there and like, stop them? You want, like, you should do that. You should like, run out onto the park just screaming and try
yes,
to stop
them. Yes, I want to pull a full like Donald Sutherland, like, no, God!
Yeah,
I'm seeing
Act 3 of Soylent Green. Of you just running around trying to stop her.
I had thought that New Jersey's reputation as like the toxic waste state, the radiation state, came from the whole Toms River stuff, where they would start taking boxes and bags and
see,
containers
I
of toxic waste
the
down.
Turnpike, when you go down the turnpike and it's just...
Partly it's that because it just
and
looks
toxic
unsafe.
Avenger.
But the Toxic Avenger was from the 80s. The Toms River stuff started in the 60s. And they started to take all of the tri-state areas, like toxic waste, and just literally dump it in a trench in someone's backyard. And everyone started paying local farmers for that. Mm-hmm. And it seeped into the water supply, and everyone started to get cancer. But it's so hard to connect the dots from, you live in Toms River, you have cancer, therefore, because you drank this water, you have cancer. It's much easier with radium poisoning because what these women were going through is ghastly. And again, I'm not sure if I should actually mention this, but I'll bring up one thing.
Listen, they're dead, and everybody who ever loved them is as well.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, you've been warned. So, this woman has a jaw infection, and her jaw really hurts, and her teeth are getting loose. So, she goes to a dentist. The dentist palpates her jaw to see what's wrong. Her jaw breaks off.
Oh, my God.
That's how bad it is. Her whole lower face was
rotting. Like a ventriloquist dummy.
It broke off, and then they were able to just pull it out because all of the tissue had necrosed. It's disgusting to hear about, and I'm sorry I have to pass it on, but that's what radium does. And since these women were actually ingesting it, that was happening all over their bodies.
So whoever discovered radium, whoever it was.
Madame Curie.
Yes.
Thanks.
Is, you know, the greatest villains of our time, really.
Yes, but she wasn't saying everyone should drink radium all the time. Other people were, but not her.
Mm-hmm.
So the normal radium lung levels is 8.5 bits per million. That's the lung test. So one of the workers on this got tested. She wasn't at 8.5, the regular level. She was at 99.7 subdivisions, which is like 10 times the regular exposure. And the guy giving her the test was someone who worked for USRC. He then took it himself. he got a higher score than any of his employees. Because the employees cycled in and out over the years.
Then his head fell off. That's true. His head fell off and rolled. Through every orange. Through orange, east orange, to south orange. Settling down in west orange.
The book goes on to talk about all of the terrible ways that the USRC screwed over its workers, including coming up with a new legislation that supposedly was protecting people by saying this is how you can get paid if you've been injured on the job, because the old workplace injury in New Jersey was only for 5 months, and if cancer doesn't take 5 months, it takes more than that to develop, so everyone here was out of luck. So they passed a new law, but it only was for like jaw necrosis. Mm-hmm. So if you didn't have a jaw literally falling off, then no dice. They considered it not a workplace injury. And because of that law, it took years and years before anyone was able to say, I am dying and being poisoned because my employer said, drink radium.
I was going to say anything without a jaw. One or 10 years.
I don't know if sign language is invented back then. There were millions of people who were drinking radium back then. They were selling jars that were up to like $200 back then, and they were lined with radium so that you could drink it. And you were supposed to drink 5 to 7 glasses of radium water a day. And that's how much you needed to get health benefits.
When did they start drinking radium? When did they stop? And when did everybody go, no radium?
It was in the early 20s that they started to do studies to figure out if radium was connected to all of these necrosis and cancers that they were finding. But part of the deal with USRC was that if they found anything, they weren't allowed to publish it. So it took a little while, but word got out that they were sitting on a study that proved that it was linked. So that got published, but like it only got published in the Star Ledger. So there was another radium plant in Ottawa, Illinois, and no one in Ottawa knew because they didn't read the Star Ledger, and there wasn't the internet or modern radio even. So there it wasn't national news.
Being published in Jersey, it's, you know, only people in Jersey were going to know.
Right.
If you're like if you read Jerry Eisenberg, you find out, and nobody else knows. Well, I assume he was writing back.
Yes. And people would give him stuff because he was at large. It could be, radium is part of his beat. Nothing is out of bounds if you're at large. So, we'll pivot on to our Nickelodeon briefly. There is a 1940s movie called Madame Curie. Deals a lot with radium. Stars Greer Garson as Madame Curie. Check that out if you want to learn more about the lady who invented radium, gave it to us, gave it to the world.
You could have got Toxic Avenger and ended on a light note.
Well, I'm going to end on a lighter note still because
I know, like, I don't know how much I could talk about Madame Curie. I could talk a lot about Toxic Avenger. We could do a whole Toxic Avenger episode, which might be a little bit of a stretch for 1917.
Yes. Yes. Okay. If you want to talk about a ultra violent character, I have a birthday for you. Having a birthday 100 years ago today is Reg Smith, the creator of Andy Capp.
Oh boy,
Andy Capp, the most British cartoon ever made.
How did Andy Capp get the hot fries deal? Like really? Like why did Andy
cutting Capp... right to the important news that matters?
Yeah. Why did Andy Capp like? Think about when they, all right, so I'm assuming they made hot fries, and then they're like, oh, we need a character to attach to our hot fries product.
Yeah.
Why Andy Capp? Was Andy Capp ever popular on a level where, like, oh, he's going to be the one to...
I want to know if there was, like, a 6-month storyline that revolved around hot fries, because he got the hot fries deal. It's like, it's part of the contract. Andy has to talk about hot fries every day.
You know, I didn't mention, I don't think I've seen hot fries in a while. Does Andy Capp still have the hot fries deal?
I hope so. I'd be very disappointed in the world if Andy Capp, the world's favorite British wife-beating drunk, lost on his contract.
Let's see. Is your hot fries are still around? Maybe they are. I bet they are. Actually, maybe I'm just not noticing because I don't really eat them.
Oh, yes. Okay, hot fries are still around. Cheddar fries are still around. Yeah. huh, it's American. I assumed it was English.
Same here.
Yeah, and it was just, like, sent over.
So somebody over here is just a huge Andy Capp fan.
Wait. Andy Capp.
Yeah, there
Andy Capp is like the Outback Steakhouse of English people. It's like what we think English people are like, where they're wearing their caps.
Which can only be called an Andy Capp hat.
Yeah, I was reaching for the word to describe his cap, and it's Cap. Andy Capp's cap. And he's got the scarf, and he's playing, like, you know, soccer, which he calls football, and he's smoking all the time, and he's drinking all the time.
Were you ever, like, I know you were probably a comic book reader.
Yeah.
Or a comic strip reader.
Yeah.
Because I think I was, too.
I don't think
I was ever an Andy Capp fan, though.
I didn't know about comics until, like, comic strips in the newspaper until, like, seventh grade, when it was, like, this bolt of from the blue, like, you know, the Sunday comics that are so great, they're every day. Every day the Sunday comics are here. They just called other comics. So I would start to read, like, the daily comic strips, and Andy Capp was one of them, and I never understood the Sunday comics, so I thought, like, maybe reading Monday through Saturday is the key to understanding what's going on, because it was, like, the same three jokes, like, him on the soccer field.
Him drunk.
And him trying to sneak home.
Now, I know he said, oh, he's a wife, but usually his wife would beat him up. I don't remember, did he himself beat his wife?
I was quoting The Simpsons.
Okay, yeah, that's right, yeah.
Homer Simpson's reading the comics, and he goes, oh, Andy Capp, you wife-beating drunk. You need to have it in the context of Homer lovingly saying that, mm-hmm. because it's just a mean, accurate description of Andy Capp otherwise.
Did the Lockhorns ever have physical violence?
They threatened it a lot. They did. Up to the Jackie Gleason line. They never actually...
Like Mr. Lockhorn with, like, you know, a broken beer bottle shoved up against his wife's neck.
Yeah. I read Fred Bassett a lot, trying to crack Fred Bassett.
I don't remember Fred Bassett.
He was a Bassett hound.
I got that, okay.
It was very New Yorkery, where he was a Bassett hound that could think, but his thoughts would be like, I hope you drop a hot dog, and the second panel would be like, I would love it if you dropped a hot dog, mm-hmm. and the third panel would be like, you see, I like hot dogs, and that's it.
No.
It was very cozy humor.
Why? Oh, we know someone who liked that. So, did you like Fred Bassett?
No, but I was fascinated. I was trying to crack the code. I was trying to decipher why other people would like it. I remember our college journalism professor, Dr. Cole, saying that
That's right.
when they started to run a comic strip, any newspaper anywhere, they got in trouble because there'd be like 15 people who liked it, and everyone else either cared or didn't like it. And you couldn't get rid of the comic without getting daily complaints from the 15 people.
No, I wrote a paper on this.
Oh, you did?
Actually, yeah.
Oh, wow.
You're in college. Yeah. And, because, I mean, every city had multiple newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the news is all basically the same.
Yeah.
The sports is all the same. So if you can get the exclusive rights to a particular comic strip, that could be the one that would...
Ah, so if two papers, only one of them has Garfield, you go...
Or Bassett, yeah.
God, imagine your life if you're picking your newspaper based on the Fred Bassett occurrence.
Yeah, like that was, you know, comic strips were important because that could be something that was only, like, for your newspaper.
Yeah.
You know? I imagine, what if you're, like, a Fred Bassett fan? He's in the Daily News. And you're also a fan of Andy Capp. He's opposed to you buy two newspapers.
I think you do have to buy two.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know people who buy, like, three or four papers a day. Because they'll buy, like, the Final City edition also to get the updated sports scores.
How old are these people that you know? Wait a
minute. They may be my father-in-law.
there's very simple ways to get the final sports scores.
That involves knowing how to type.
I know people. I know person.
So, Reg Smythe was a British cartoonist. He made up Andy Capp. Andy Capp is still running, I believe.
Yes, and I just looked him up. Not only does he have the deal with Hot Fries,
uh-huh.
he's also the spokes character for a chain of liquor stores in North Carolina.
Wow.
Where I'll be traveling this summer. I'm going to be going to North Carolina. I'll be going to the Outer Banks.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to make sure I stop at an Andy Capp brand liquor store.
Oh, and while you're going down there, you can look for a Mean Jeans. Because there are Mean Jeans in Virginia, which you will pass along the way.
Yeah. I'll get a Mean Jean burger?
Yeah, you can get a Mean Jean burger. along the way to an Andy Cap wife beater or whatever it's called.
So I'm gonna mean you're gonna wash out some Andy Cap liquor.
Yeah. On to our quiz for this week.
Is it about Andy Cap?
No. Oh. It is about the TV shows set in 1917. And because we have a guest, I'm going to ask you to pass over the mic. So Steve Canova is going to be taking the quiz this week, ladies and gentlemen. Hope you're ready for it, Steve. You up in your World War I TV shows?
Let's see. Well, just try me. Let's see.
Okay. In this drawing room show, so much of the... Drawing room. As I was saying it, I knew it was wrong.
Okay.
In this drawing room show, so much of the male waitstaff was serving overseas, the butler in an April 1917 episode had to allow women into the dining room for the first time.
I know this.
Vinny does know this.
I know.
We talked about this show. He watched it. I watched it too.
So PBS?
It was on PBS.
Downton Abbey?
Downton Abbey, yes. Yes. They get much harder from there because that was the one show that people know that took place during World War I. This British farce's fourth season was set in 1917. It featured a murderer's row of British comedians, Rowan Atkinson, Stephen Fry, and Hugh Laurie, all trying not to get killed.
Fawlty Towers?
Blackadder. The fourth season is called Blackadder Goes Forth, set in World War I. Another fourth season of a TV show of this definitive drawing room. It's set from 1914 to 1918. They did the Downton Abbey thing where they showed all of World War I over the span of one season. Ruby, one of the stars of this show, works in Silvertown during the Silvertown explosion that we talked about earlier this year. What is the name of that British drawing room show? The precursor to Downton Abbey. Another PBS show.
There are shows that happened in 1917 that weren't in England.
Yes.
I guess one of...
No, we will not.
Try to defend myself. Vinny, do you know?
No. I'll give you a hint. Think of Grover. Like, near?
Grover Cleveland.
Far.
Oh, I think
near?
I know. Yes.
Far. Okay, Vinny.
Upstairs, downstairs.
Upstairs, downstairs, correct. This 1990s filmed adventure show was edited from hour-long episodes into 90-minute TV movies for a release on DVD. I watched this in the 90s. I was a big fan of it.
You have me.
You have me? Oh, you did not watch the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles?
No.
Wow, it was all about World War One.
No,
it was fantastic. And it has some special effects which don't quite hold up. But they were miraculous for their time, especially for being on a TV budget. But you can clearly see that this is like a kid on a green screen that they've put onto a roof to say, like, Dad, look at me, I'm on the roof. And when I was watching, it's like, wow, how did they have the budget to do that? Special effects are amazing. And now you look at it, it's like, oh, that's awful.
Well, that show didn't take place in England, right? So I have no defense.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Couldn't they just put the kid on a roof for the shot? It just seems much easier. Okay, now we're getting hard, which is tough because we're not getting the
this
easy
is so
ones.
Much easier to play at home. Or
it's, like
car,
it's the Jeopardy effect.
Oh,
really? Like on Jeopardy, they assume,
yeah.
Like, you know.
Okay, this recent British show, because 1914 was when the Brits entered World War I, so there were a lot of shows in 2014 that were showing what World War One was like 100 years ago. So this is one of those shows. This recent British show was aired during the centenary anniversary of World War One and dealt with life at a French war hospital.
God. All right, so 2014 it aired?
Yep, it was called Crimson Field. Not even going to give you a chance to answer that.
See, I love that. Oh my God, was that the first episode you guys played the Jane Wyman game?
Yes,
oh, that was great. It was so much easier. I'm sorry, no, Ronald Reagan.
I'm sorry, I don't have a quiz of that caliber for you. Okay, Riley, Ace of Spies is the name of a show that dealt with a Russian spy over the first decades of the 20th century, including World War I. Which New Zealander actor played Riley, Ace of Spies? I got three choices for you. Was it Sam Neill? Was it Russell Crowe or was it Alan Dale?
Get rid of Russell Crowe.
Before you Google it, all three of them are New Zealand actors.
Yeah,
I'm not fooling you on
Russell
that.
Russell Crowe.
Okay. So you're down to Sam Neill and Alan Dale. Who is the character is Riley, Ace of Spies.
That wasn't going to help you. Come on.
I don't think Russell Crowe would play a character named Riley, Ace of Spies. So Sam Neill is number one.
Sam Neill and Alan Dale.
All right. Who I don't know. So should I go with Sam Neill?
You would recognize Alan Dale. He shows up all over the place.
So you're saying that because that's the answer.
I'm saying that because that would let you know. When you Google him, it's like, oh, that guy's on Lost. He's been in Lost for other TV shows.
I'll still go with Sam Neill.
You're picking Sam Neill? Correct. It is Sam Neill. Yes. Okay, you got two.
Last one.
Tom Grattan's War was a 1960s show about a boy sent to what part of rural England to avoid World War I bombing? Was he sent to Yorkshire? Was he sent to Scotland? Or was he sent to Wales? Please don't write in about if Scotland or Wales was part of the UK or Great Britain or whatever I said, because I don't understand the difference between them.
Nobody's writing in.
Give me the options again. I'm sorry.
Yorkshire, Scotland, and Wales. All places good distance away from London. Not going to be bombed. Rural.
You know what? I'll go with the home of Tom Jones, Wales.
You're going with Wales? No, it was Yorkshire. It was Yorkshire, Downton Abbey territory. Okay, our next one features Benedict Cumberbatch.
I thought that was the last question.
Sorry, we got like seven more.
Oh,
I'm kidding. Gosh. Three more. Okay, follow Benedict.
Two more.
It's not an auction. You are hearing all of them, whether you like it or not. Follow Benedict Cumberbatch before, during, and after the war in which recent adaptation of Ford Madox Ford's War Quartet? Let's assume I said the phrase War Quartet correctly. He's shaking his head. Doesn't have it. It's called Parade's End.
Did you know that, Vinny?
No. It was an HBO show.
No.
Not a big Benedict Cumberbatch fan?
No.
Sorry. No, his fans are the Cumberbatches. I wasn't throwing shade on the man. He's a fine actor. Okay. Anzac and Anzac Girls are two similar shows set in what country during World War I? Anzac is an acronym, all caps. A-N-Z-A-C.
A-N-Z-A-C.
If I told you what it stood for, well, one, I don't know what it stands for. I know some of the letters, not all of them.
Well, N-Z. I would say it's New Zealand.
N-Z.
Ooh. So I would think it would be New Zealand.
Good guess. Close. Australia. The A in A-N-Z-A-C is Australia. So they were including New Zealanders, but then they would go to Australia to serve.
I should probably sit next to Vinny, because Vinny wasn't heard on that.
Oh, I forgot about that. I forgot that we moved the mic over.
Sorry.
Now it's Vinny's turn to not be heard. Our last question. Okay, you have a chance of getting this one, because it's like the Jeopardy thing where it's only tangentially related to the actual 1917.
Okay.
A 1970s BBC show about the Royal Flying Corps. A 1970s BBC show about the Royal Flying Corps has the same name as an American sitcom of the 90s. What is the name of the 1970s BBC show?
Friends.
Wings.
Oh.
Wings. Wow. Oh, I thought you almost had that one.
I was going to say ER. Oh.
I was saying Seinfeld.
I thought you had it. I thought you had Wings. Admit it. You were a Wings watcher.
You love Roy Biggins.
You do. Who doesn't? Wow. You're pulling from way down on the call sheet there from Roy.
Roy Biggins was the heart and soul of that show.
Oh, I have not thought about Roy in a long time. I thought you were going to go Lowell. I thought you were going to go Antonio. Or
two people who've had much bigger careers since Wings.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah, so the guys that you think of.
No, Roy Biggins. He's just, he did Wings. That's it.
Right. And maybe he was born in 1917, because that would be some relevance.
All right.
Oh,
relevance.
We are drinking right now, and I think it is affecting me. So before we do any more, I'm going to sign off for the 1917 podcast. Until next week, when we are going to talk about the Cuttingsley Fairies, ahoy hoy.
Ahoy hoy.